This episode of Forensic Forecast is brought to you by Digital Forensics Magazine at www.digitalforensicsmagazine.com and by contributions by our listeners. Thank you all very much. Hello, welcome to another episode of Forensic Forecast. Today is Sunday, the 30th of May, 2010, and we're joined by Old Faithful Eric Huber. Sorry about the old there.
It's fine. Glad to be on again.
And he's fresh back from CEIC this last week, and we're going to get his thoughts on some of the things which happened there. Just not the incident, though. That's not allowed to be discussed.
That's off topic.
We're also joined by someone's dog, for the sounds of things. that came from Mark McKinnon. That was just rather an unusual hello.
Yep, that was from me.
All right, and no, we're going to try our best to get along today. There's not going to be any fighting between Mark and I. So, we'll see if that plays out anyway. But, Eric, you went to CEIC this week, and I remember seeing one of your tweets. You said that you've actually met Rob Lee in person now. Now, is it true that he is actually 9 feet tall?
Please.
And has biceps the size of, like, a normal man?
He does. When I first met him, I thought, man, this guy must have played football for the Air Force Academy. He's just this big wall of a guy. And one of the nice things about CEIC in these conferences is you get to meet a lot of people that, I've talked to Rob, tweets and email and the phone, but I'd never actually gotten to meet him in person. So that was one of the nice things about being able to go to these conferences. I got to meet a lot of different people in person that I hadn't been able to talk to before. Dave Shaver, Ryan Pittman, Lars and Larry Daniel, and a bunch of the folks, the guidance folks that I hadn't seen for years because I haven't done any training for them for a long time. So it was a great conference. It was 1,300 people in attendance.
Oh, that's incredible. That's a lot of people.
Well, and didn't they have a lot of courses besides just guidance stuff
there? Yeah, they've got a good mix, because that was my original concern. What I had heard negatively about CEIC in the past, and this was from many years ago, that it was just kind of one big, large guidance sales effort, which I'm sure it is, because it's their convention, so they have all their customers there in one place. But the only sales pitch thing I really drifted into was more of a Dell thing on Wednesday, where it was kind of a thinly veiled sales pitch for some of their hardware. It was an interesting presentation, but I went to a lot of the digital forensic stuff. I actually landed in I guess it was more of an e-discovery type presentation with Joshua Gilliland of Bowtie Law did a presentation called Textual Relations, where he talked about kind of the law as it pertains to texting, and he had a bunch of very interesting stories about, cases where people tweeted things where they probably shouldn't have and ended up in law, and then talked about the applicable laws on that. So you could very much make your own convention experience. One of my guys was there and went through some of the actual guidance software courses, and I know he enjoyed the conditions course. So guidance seems to be very sensitive about not having the presentations be sales pitches, and they say as much. So I didn't walk away with any indication that the presentations were anything other than just independent presentations, and they were all good. I had the classic problem at this convention, which I've had at HTCIA conventions in the past, which is, I've got all these sessions I want to go to, but they conflict with what I'm doing, or in one case when I was presenting. So to me, that's a mark of a good conference when there's more stuff to take than I have time to take.
Very cool.
I heard that Flash Forensics course was really great.
Yeah, it's the Adobe Flash. I finally got to do the presentation on that. As some people know, Christian Gudjonsson of LogToTimeline.com, and he's the fellow behind the LogToTimeline tool that you get on the SIFT workstation and independently if you go to his website. We've teamed up, and we're doing research on Adobe Flash cookies, which is a part of browser forensics. You know, if you're going to know the browser cookies, you really should know the Adobe Flash cookies. So we're working on an article that we hope to get submitted to, actually, Owen Casey's Journal of Digital Investigation. And then Kristen's doing some tool development in support of that, too. So I got to do the presentation kind of from a high level. It took me about, I got done in about a little over an hour, and it was pretty well attended. I think 75 people, I was told, showed up or signed up. I think, I don't know, it was maybe 50 or 60, it seems like, showed up, and the questions were good, and the session went well, and I was very happy with it. So it was exciting for me to be able to kind of share with the community and have some good discussions afterwards. So I enjoyed it very much.
Superb. I went to F3 in November and Jelle Niemanstreet, whose name I just absolutely massacred. He and one of his colleagues gave a presentation about web browsers, and specifically one of the things of what traces are left behind when this private browsing feature is turned on. And that was one of the things they talked about there, was the remains left behind by Flash whenever private browsing is engaged, because whereas it doesn't save like the internet history and everything, you know, Flash saves stuff separately. So if they've been watching like pornographic movies during work time or something like that, you were still able to find that information out from looking at these remnants. Now, have you looked at that at all?
Yeah, in fact, I just made a case. Actually, I didn't. One of my guys just had a case last week, about a week or two ago, where Flash cookies played a role into that, where we think CC Cleaner was used, and it deleted the Flash cookies, but it didn't overwrite them. And then there was a particular artifact that Kristen and I called the master settings cookie that didn't seem to have be touched at all. And then, like, right before I went for the presentation, I got a an email from a detective. I don't think I can mention the detective's name yet, because I have to call this person and get the full story. But I got an email from this detective saying, hey, I just used what you taught me on a case, and it corroborated, you know, some a victim's story. So this detective is particularly excited to tell me what the story is. So I hope to get that information next week. But yeah, we're starting to see it used. And the interesting thing, and what I talked about in the conference, is right now Adobe Flash cookies don't respect private browsing. So you put up your, you know, porn mode, as we call it in the forensic community, those Flash cookies are going to get, they're going to land on the machine. What Adobe announced in, I think it was January, February timeframe, is that when Adobe Flash Player 10.1 comes out, it will respect, recognize porn mode. And what I think is going to happen is it'll make our job a little more difficult, but there's still kind of, what I'm reading from the blog post, what I'm speculating is, we'll go from traditional cookies that, you know, we automatically are going to land on the hard drive. I think what we're going to see is session cookies that will be in memory. So if it's in memory, of course, it can end up on the machine. And this is part of memory forensics. And memory forensics is something that I've been increasingly interested in and trying to educate myself in. And in fact, that's what one of my objectives at CEIC was, to learn as much as I can, just so I can get started on doing some more educating myself. So actually, Michael Weber of BitSec Forensics gave a really nice presentation there. You know, these poor guys only have 90 minutes. Like, Rob did his super timeline presentation, which was fantastic. And, you know, Michael Weber did a lab on memory forensics, which was fantastic. But they have to fit all this lab stuff into 90 minutes. And they both did a very good job with it. But it's a lot of these presentations, because, you know, they're 90 minutes, tend to be sort of teasers, which is, look, here's my research, here's the cool stuff. And, you know, let's play about with this a little bit, but, you know, here's the PDF for, you know, go to this website to get, you know, the more information, which is fine, because it allows you to get exposed to a lot of different ideas in, you know, the 3 or 4 days that you're there.
Very, very nice. I agree with you completely about learning more about all this kind of stuff. And I keep saying, you know, the more I learn, the less I know.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, I've been looking at this, this SANS.
Lee, I've been saying that for a while about you.
Thank you. There you go. See?
Yeah.
I've said nothing. Yeah. Nothing. Yeah. The whole time.
Let the record show. The first shot came from Mark.
I know. Right. Well, I hope you're keeping score, Eric.
I am.
No, but I've been looking at this challenge from the SANS Forensic Summit, which is coming up in July. And I'm just thinking, you know, I can do like regular forensics when I receive a computer in from a client, but any further than that, I just don't know it, and I'd like to. But getting into it and trying to figure out how to learn about it is a bit of a challenge, I think, really.
Yeah. It's an ever-expanding field. When I first got into digital forensics, you know, there's always been a networking aspect of it, but the concentration really was on, you know, dead disk forensics, pull the plug out of the back of the machine and, you know, go to work on your image. And that's progressed into live response. Memory forensics is a big thing now. You know, mobile device forensics. I mean, it's easily, you can just specialize just in that, add network forensics, and there's just more for any one person to keep track of. So, you know, it's funny that you say that, because I think a lot of IT people and digital forensics people in particular kind of fall into the trap that says, you know, because I don't know everything, I don't know anything, and it's easy to kind of run yourself down. But I think one of the reasons that a lot of us are attracted to digital forensics is there's always something new. You know, you have to learn. There's more content out there than anyone could be an expert in, which means if you like to learn and you like to be challenged, this is a great career to do that.
There's always the opportunity to learn.
Oh, I totally agree with that. I mean, it's just amazing to think of what we still don't know and what we haven't, you know, uncovered yet, and especially with everything that's still coming out. I mean, it's just amazing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And digital forensics, and maybe it's because, you know, there's so many of us who have been in law enforcement, there tends to be a bit of catastrophic thinking, which I've seen throughout the in my time in digital forensics, which is, oh, gosh, you know, the hard drives are getting so big, you know, digital forensics has come to an end because it'll be too big. Oh, gosh, BitLocker's coming. You know, we're all out of business. Oh, gosh, you know, it's always some bit of technology. And, you know, I tell people, it's like, well, you know, there's always, you know, digital forensics at a large level is basically the convergence of technology and law. There's always going to be some bit of technology that some lawyers are going to need people like us to parse and present evidence to them. So, you know, who knows what it's going to look like. You know, I couldn't have predicted, I don't know how long I've been in the business now, 6-8 years, that we'd have these wonderful smartphones, but there's always something different. I mean, I've done forensics just on my own, on my Kindle. You know, I never thought I'd have an ebook reader, much less that I have an ebook reader that I was able to do forensics on. So, yeah, it's always something cool.
I just think it's incredible. And it's imperative that we do our best to learn more, because people are getting smarter out there. The people who are committing these crimes are getting smarter, and the technology is getting smarter, like you say. And you know, people will use things like a Kindle or the iPad or the mobile phones to participate in illegal activities, and if we don't know what we're doing with them, we're going to get left behind, and our clients are going to go somewhere else. So yeah, I mean, the reason that I think things like CEIC and the SANS Summit are so good, because they're just a feast, really, and I think it's fantastic. But, yeah, I guess CEIC isn't the only thing which Guidance have been up to recently. They also have acquired Tableau. Now, Eric, you wrote something about this on your blog. I personally slightly worried by the acquisition, but you seem to have some arguments which are quite positive about this.
Yeah, I wrote a blog post called "Don't Panic" last weekend, and I just did a new blog post actually last night on CEIC, and I touched on this, and I've talked to the Guidance folks this week, and I actually got to meet Rob Botchek, who's the president of Tableau, and now he's the senior vice president in charge of, I think his role is senior vice president in charge of NCASE Forensic, because that falls under his jurisdiction now. I think it's a good move for Guidance and even Tableau and actually the community at large. And in a strange way, it'll be a good move for Access Data. And the reason why I think it is because we have to have competition to bring the best out of these companies. And I don't want to kick guidance software any more than we normally do. But, you know, we all know kind of back in the bad old days when guidance software was the dominant power, and they knew it and they treated their customers like it, and they dug themselves in a hole that they're very aware of, and they want to dig themselves out of. And what I've seen, and I'd be curious on what you two think, is Access Data had this recent renaissance where they had additional money, and a lot of folks came over from guidance. And actually, that brings up one thing. The guidance software people, one of the things they wanted to make sure that everyone knew, and I said, okay, I'm happy to communicate this, is when they had the great exodus, when they had, a bunch of people from Access Data or from guidance go over to Access Data, they didn't lose any developmental staff. So both Access Data and guidance software were very positive, enthusiastic about their developmental teams, and they both should be. But Access Data seems to have taken the lead in kind of the innovation, because we're at a time now, when I first started, you basically had to buy EnCase. You would use EnCase for your primary disk forensic tool, and you would use FTK as your email tool and also as your indexing tool. Now you can, if you're just coming out of school or you're just getting into this, you can get a copy of FTK3, and you don't necessarily have to use EnCase now. And EnCase, they understand that. So they announced a bunch of different features that they're going to add to EnCase, and I blogged on it. It's probably too much to go into here. But the Tableau purchase makes sense, because they've always been involved in selling hardware, but they've done it through, they were basically a reseller. So now they have that. They basically bought a profitable business. Tableau and, Rob Bocek and the team have done a very good job establishing a very trusted name with Tableau, and they're a profitable business. And they're even started, if you noticed, as we have, they've even started to do software development, and then they have their very nice TIM tool. So they're not only can they do hardware, but they also can do software development. So by purchasing Tableau, they got that developmental team to add to their developmental team, and their developmental team does some excellent work. I mean, look, I use NK6 as my primary forensic tool. So guidance, they've always been good at innovation. They've always been good at coming up with good ideas. Where they've really kind of stepped on the digital forensic community's toes has been the execution. Like the indexer, one of the things they announced is they're updating their indexer. They're doing some cool stuff with that. Okay, great. But when they released it the last time, it didn't work. So what they have now is they have the two issues that kind of concern me is, one, can you merge two organizational cultures? And that's always the an issue with an M&A. And everybody I talked to was very excited. I don't know anybody on the Tableau side other than I got to meet Rob at this convention, but the people I know are on the guidance side, and the people I talked to on the guidance side were all very enthusiastic about it. And they were all surprised, because they really kept the secret well, Tableau and the management and guidance and the management, because I got the impression that, nobody really knew it was coming until it was done. But Robert Bocek is going to report directly into guidance as CEO, so there's going to be no food chain issues. I mean, they've got the organizational chart worked out, and then it's just a matter of integrating that developmental staff. And as long as they continue on trying to re-engage the community, and as long as they don't do anything silly like which making like Tableau an in-case only tool, which not only did they not do that, but if you've read what's been announced recently, they're actually going to open TIM up. So before, Tableau Imager, their software, would only work with a Tableau device. Now what they've announced is it will work with any hardware device. So that, from my communications with the guidance people, is kind of one of their first moves in showing people that, look, this is, they're trying to be more open, and they're trying to meet the needs of the community. So trying not to sound like a guidance software cheerleader here, but I do, from talking to those folks, I do think it will be a good move, as long as they can merge the organizational cultures and there aren't any personality clashes. But everyone seems to really be optimistic about it. And I think it's good for Access Data. Well, why is that? Because if guidance software continues to compete and they continue to innovate, that forces Access Data to, not become, we don't want to see them become the dominant power either, because we'll end up in the same situation. So even though we all know there's some less than positive feelings maybe between the two camps. They're actually pretty good for each other when it comes to competition.
Yeah. I think that the thing which concerns most people about this, if they are concerned at all, is that Guidance, they have their own right blockers available. You know, they have their fast block right blockers, which do a decent job, don't get me wrong. But it seems as if Tabler were offering, like, possibly a cheaper alternative. And I think people are probably a little worried now that the cheaper alternative is going to get swallowed up and not going to be, first of all, as cheap, and second of all, potentially be as, lack of a better word, problematic as some of the fast blocks have been in the past.
Well, I think if they do that, they're going to lose business. I mean, people then move over WibiTech or one of the other ones. And, you know, I mean, they have a good product right now, but if you let it go down, then new people coming on board aren't going to want to take it.
Yeah, in my conversations with Robert, one of the things that he points out, and I heard an interview with him, and I don't know if you did it or somebody else did it, and he repeated the same thing to me that he repeated in the interview, which is one of the things that he's very proud of for Tableau, is they've kept their prices down. They've built a profitable business without charging, because some of these hardware write blocking devices are ridiculously priced. I mean, $5,000 for a hardware write blocker is insane. The Tableau stuff has been reasonably priced. So I got no indication at all that that's going to change, because that's their successful business model. And then as long as they keep the Tableau developmental staff, you know, happy and they remain within the Guidance software family, then we should still see the same quality products that we're seeing out of Tableau. So that's the, you know, in these M&A situations, that's one of the big deals, which is not only do you have to merge the organizational cultures, but you got to make sure your superstars are happy and they stay there. So assuming that happens, I think we'll see business as usual from Tableau. But, you know, Guidance has earned people being suspicious, so, and they're acutely aware of that, so we'll see how it plays out.
I think one thing which is definitely good about this, I don't think it's all doom and gloom by any stretch of the imagination, is that the first time I saw Tim in action, Tableau imager, what was said to me was this works much better with our equipment because it takes full advantage of everything which is inside the Tableau. So, as we've seen, you know, some of the testing, there's marginal speed increases, but on some of the, you know, a small percentage, the speed increase is like a third.
Yeah.
Now, if they can bring that into, like, Encase or the other tools which they offer, that would be fantastic, without question. That would be worth probably, you know, a few extra dollars for the equipment then.
Yeah, I did an 80 gig drive with Tim, I think it was 1.1, like 2 weeks ago, and 80 gig was all 80 gigs. This is an encrypted drive, so I mean, this is 80 gigs of full data, and I did it in like 34 minutes. That's amazing.
That's nice.
Oh, it's amazing.
Wow. That is good.
Oh, it's just, one of my guys next door kept coming in. It's like, no, seriously, did you do it in 34 minutes? I mean, it was one of these deals where it's like, did we get the full image? It's like, yeah, we did. It's like, it's great. Okay, you know, go team.
So yeah, I'm that is something I'm very excited about if they can implement that. Now I realize that something like that will take some time to roll out because they have to rewrite core pieces of the of Encase and whatnot. But when it happens, I think it'll be very, very worthwhile. But that's not the only thing Guidance have been up to recently. They've or CIC for that matter, but the third piece of news about Guidance is that they've also released the Windows command line acquisition tool. Now, I think a lot of people may wonder why. Have you two got any thoughts on this?
Of why they released it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's I'm sure it's cool, but it's like I don't really, you know, when I do my command line stuff, it's, you know, in SIFT or you know, one of the Linux boot CDs. So I'm sure it's cool. I just haven't figured out a circumstance when I would need it, given the tool set I already have.
The one thing I can see where you might use it would be if you wanted to, if you're doing incident response and you're using like WFT or something, and you want to take a physical copy of the drive and put it in E01 format.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Through the command here, you know, okay. That'd be one place I could think you take advantage of it, and because then you can create an E01. It would take less time to create it, and so on. You're not writing so much to the drive or what have you. So,
okay.
That's the only thing.
Can I give you another opinion on why this might be the case? Have any of you two ever used Windows Forensic Environment before?
I have not.
Okay.
Yes, I see where you're going with it.
Right. So, as everyone knows, I'm big on this whole volume shadow copy stuff. And I started on this mostly because of Troy Larson's work on the area. And what he proposed to do to get to the volume shadow copies was to use Windows FE. That way you could protect the data that you were analyzing and yet also use like the volume shadow service to mount volume shadow copies. Now, the only previous way of acquiring volume shadow copies would be through DD, which very, very bad if you get a significant size hard drive. So if you got like a 1 terabyte hard drive, you got 20 volume shadow copies, you're talking about 20 terabytes worth of data that you acquire. With a command line option here, with a guidance tool, I don't know because I've not tried it out yet, but I suspect you can point the acquisition tool straight to the volume shadow copy through something like Windows Forensic Environment.
Oh, very cool.
And take a compressed image of that rather than a full bit-for-bit DD image. So that'd be one of the reasons I suspect that they've done that. But who's to say?
Oh, no, that makes perfect sense.
Because, I mean, with like the GUI tools, like FT, like you can get FTK Imager and Encase to work fine within Windows FE, but the GUI tools, you can't point them straight at the volume shadow copies. So it would kind of make sense for them to do something like that. But then there's also the other part of this that, you know, FTK have also released their imager for other OSs as well, and they're command line based as well, which I thought was kind of interesting when I saw that news story.
Yeah, that's good news because a lot of people use FTK imager, and I know it's taught in like the SANS forensic classes. And correct me if I'm wrong, I'm almost positive Rob Lee said he was going to add that to the SIFT workstation here pretty quickly, but that would be great because that you know, gives another option for those of us who use that tool and other you know, these Linux and other OS distros coming out. So that's very good, especially, you know, just use it. I know a lot of people use it just to dump physical memory, you know, pop it into a CD, and so it's good to have that flexibility. So that's some of the innovation that we're seeing out of the Access Data Camp now.
I think it's fantastic. I think people previously have been relying on things like the EWF acquire and whatnot from the libEWF guys. So it's nice to have something which is slightly more, I hate doing this, more official,
yeah,
and recognized than previous software. So yeah, I think it's fantastic. I mean, it's like what you were saying before, is that the acquisition of things like Tableau and whatnot, they are driving the competitors to be more innovative in their products as well. And I think we're seeing that being pushed by people like Parabon as well, really.
Well, and even the even you guys who are doing open source tools. I mean, you guys are doing some excellent work with the volume shadow copy research and tool development. Well, that pushes people, you know, you have organizations like Access Data and Guidance Software who want people to pay for their forensic software. Well, if folks like you are doing, folks like you are doing work, you know, whether it's open source stuff or these really cool tools that are like, hey, $50 and, you know, you buy this really cool tool, that puts pressure on them to innovate also. You know, there's a lot of, you know, free and affordable tool development going on now that certainly didn't happen when I first started. So that's, you know, there's kind of an explosion of innovation these days.
Yeah, I'm quite looking forward to seeing what happens in the next couple of years, because there's, you know, Guidance unfortunately have been a bit stale in the last few years, and it's not just the software either. I think the training courses have gone the same way, but they're struggling.
Their recent acquisition is going to give them a shot in the arm then.
Well, absolutely, but I don't think it's just that. Like what Eric said, they're really being pushed by people like Access Data. And now, rather than just having this one-horse race, everybody's getting involved. And if you want to perform a really good forensic analysis, then you no longer have to turn to Guidance. You can do the whole thing open source, like Eric said, or you could select a different tool like FTK or X-Ways. And, you know, there's just a multitude of tools out there, and I think people are starting to realize that if they want to continue to be market leaders in this area, they're going to have to do something pretty unique and very, very good in the future. So,
well, I also think too that with the multitude of platforms that we can run on, Mac, Linux, and those are becoming much more viable options. SIFT Workstation, a perfect example. You're going to start seeing what they did with FTK Imager. So it will run on multiple OSs. That's going to start happening with other pieces of software. And I think they're also going to drive the innovators in those for FTK, FTK and Encase. If they start getting on the bandwagon with that and they port Encase over so that it can run on Mac or Linux, they're really going to start grabbing market share then, because people are starting to look at those other platforms for viable options to run their business from.
Oh, an Aqua version of Encase. I quite like the sounds of that.
Yeah, either tool showing up on a Mac, because there's a lot of people there are a lot of forensic examiners who are using Macs now. Now that, you know, it's gone over to the Intel platform, it's a more than viable alternative.
It's exciting times.
Oh yeah. I think we're gonna as I start developing new things and then hopefully porting my old things, I have to start realizing I need to consider the other two OSs as well, not just strict Windows, but I have to think about Mac and think about Linux as being able to run the software I produce, because that's going to make it more palatable for other people to say, well, I can't buy your software and I don't want to, because I only run Mac or I only run Linux, so I can't use your software. Well, I don't want that, you know, whether it's the free or purchase stuff. I want everybody to use my stuff. Right. And so if I make it available for everybody on every platform, then it's going to help everybody out.
Yep. Well, that leads us nicely on to the next subject. And that is if there's any of these tools that you particularly like using above any of the others, then feel free to nominate and even vote for that tool in the upcoming Forensic Forecast Awards. No cheering? What? No applause?
Yay! What's going on?
Yay!
I've got my nominations in. I know a lot of people that we talk to on Twitter, they've got their nominations in. So when do the nominations end? That's what I was meaning to ask you. What's your cutoff and when do you start the voting?
Oh, when, not when did you ask me a question now. let me have a quick look now, because now I have no idea.
I have to wait until the last minute. Just about it.
All right. I think I said it was like June 13th or something that it was going to... Yeah, yeah. June 13th, nominations will end. And then the top three from each category will be posted. And people can then vote on those top three at that point. So, yep, dead easy. If you want to post some nominations, go to forensicforecast.com. You'll see under the recent posts, Forensic Forecast Awards 2010. Just click on that. And you can go in, and right there on the page, you can enter in who you'd like to nominate for that. Each person, you can nominate as many people as you want for however many categories you want. Don't feel limited to just one. But when it comes down to voting, you are going to have to just vote for just one of them. So, yeah, at the moment, it's quite interesting. I'm actually very, very surprised to see myself having been nominated a couple of times outside of the podcast category. So that's quite flattering, really. I don't think I deserve it, but, you know, still. But, yeah, it's... what makes it... I mean, I don't know if any... I know Mark saw last year's. I don't know if you saw last year's attempt at the award ceremony, Eric.
I didn't. I've got it. I think I've got it on my podcast somewhere to watch, but no, I haven't watched it yet.
All right. Well, last year it was just a case of me and my brother Simon standing up in front of a camera with a couple of little bits and pieces. And to be honest, when I look back at it and watch it, I'm cringing quite badly. The jokes were bad, you know, everything about it was fairly substandard quality. But the interesting thing about this year is that this is going to be done at the SANS Forensic Summit in Washington, D.C. on the evening of July 8th this time around. So there's going to have a live audience, potentially some people there to accept their awards as they're given. And actual physical awards this year as well.
Wow.
Which
you're going to be video too?
I don't. This is something I've got to talk to Rob about, because.
You got
to
video it.
The technicalities of getting it videoed and.
Or at least do audio.
Anything else. Well, I could do audio. Audio should be fairly straightforward. But I might have to find somebody who can hold the video camera and record it. So we shall see what happens. But I'm quite looking forward to that. Because originally Robert said, well, why don't you come and do a Forensic Forecast, a live episode at the awards, at the summit. And I remember talking to him last year about it. And I said, well, why don't we just do the awards instead? We'll just do that. And the email he sent back was just, yes! Just... big capital letters. So I think this is going to be quite fun this year.
Yeah, Rob's done a really good job putting that together. He's done the lion's share on that. So he's got just this all-star lineup. So that's going to be an amazing summit.
Well, and the other thing too is, you know, he's taken what we're doing each year and applying for what's really hot that year.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very timely.
Superb. The funny thing is, and Eric, I know you've listened to the webcast, which Rob did earlier in the week.
Yes.
I don't know if you had a chance to listen to it yet, Mark.
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Do that soon.
It's quite funny because he's like, yeah, you know, these people who present, they're people who have been doing this for years, they know what they're doing, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sitting there thinking, I have no idea what I'm doing. I've never given a presentation for that many people. So
glad to hear you testify, Lee.
But I'm really looking forward to it. And like you said, for the CEIC thing, Eric, it's the opportunity to go and to meet all these people who, you know, to me, like my idols, you know,
yeah,
people.
Absolutely.
people like Rob, people like Harlan Carvey.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm ecstatic to go see this. I'm even going to get to see Mark McKinnon face-to-face for the first time. How many people get to do that in the lifetime?
Oh, God. No, you don't. You'll be sorry. One of the interesting things I found is you get to meet the people you've conversed with over email or Skype or what have you, and you know you've conversed, you've never even met them in real life, and it's mind blowing to then meet all these people. And the other thing is when you go, sometimes you'll listen to someone will say, "Oh yeah, you know, I've used your tool," or I've or whatever, and you're going, "Oh, okay," and you know it's flattering and it's humbling at the same time because you don't expect it.
Yep. I think I'm really, really looking forward to this. I think it's going to be an absolute blast, and I think if anybody listening can make it, and by all means go. It is probably slightly more expensive than other conferences that you may attend, but the interaction that you'll get with other people there is just brilliant. You just so many good people to talk to and to listen to and to learn from, and it's like what Mark says. It the stuff which you'll listen, you know, in the presentations and everything else. There's what's happening now. Like I know they're going to talk about the advanced persistent threat in a couple of their talks and stuff like that. And it's just, when you consider all the things that happened in the last year with Google being attacked by, allegedly by China and stuff like that, this kind of thing is there to help you to just build your arsenal, really, and be able to get out there and do the analysis which is going to be required of us in the future. I just think it's brilliant. So,
and it's going to be good information too, especially with the APT stuff. There's so much nonsense that got pumped out after the Google incident. You know, everybody, every salesperson on the planet saying that their tool will stop the APT quote unquote botnets, and even the people who did the initial analysis didn't do all that great of a job, as you may recall. At least some of them did. So this is going to be, you know, when these folks at this conference are talking about APT and all this other stuff, you know, these are the guys who know what they're talking about. You know, Rob understands what he's talking about, and he's going to make sure the people who show up at that conference also do it. So all the pre-filtering is done for you. It's just all forensic guru goodness.
Yeah, well, you're getting it firsthand as well, aren't you? This isn't like, as you say, some secondhand report.
No.
These are from the guys who actually looked at the data themselves and know what's going on.
You know, Harlan Carvey throwing down his kung fu, you know, right there in front of you guys. I mean, that's amazing stuff.
I can't wait to meet Harlan.
Yeah, I've only talked to him via email, and he's a very nice fellow. But he's another one of these guys where, geez, you know, I'd really like to meet him. And then, you know, CEIC was amazing because, you know, I finally got to meet Rob and Dave Shaver and Ryan Pittman and all these guys. And then next week, it's kind of exciting for me. This coming week is, you know, normal week, but then after that I'm going to Sans Fire, so I'm going to have to try and spend the whole week, you know, not seeming like a groupie and squealing because, oh, it's Stephen Northcutt, oh, it's Paul Henry. So, you know, it's like, okay, let's see if I can at least maintain some of my dignity. But there's all these folks at the Sans Institute that I've talked to before and I've gotten to know with email and Twitter and phone calls and that sort of thing. So I get to, for example, I get to do Owen Casey's mobile device forensic course. Well, Owen's just this amazing forensic guru. So it's like, I'm just so excited. I get, you know, 5 days of the Sans fire hose with Owen. So it's just, yeah, I love it. This has been a great month for me.
Superb. You guys are so lucky living in the States, you know, because you get, I mean, you're not exactly on the doorstep of everybody, but over here, you know, it's, there's no one who's as well known as that, in my opinion. And it's just, it's a shame, really. And the people don't get over here very much. I know that Troy Larson has been over here to talk a couple of times, but
well, yeah, and you guys are going to get to have Jesse Kornblum come out for the EU summit, and then Krakatoa went up, and that threw a wrench in that whole summit. Now it's delayed until, I guess, summer or fall now.
It's September 8th and 9th
September.
Now.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, because what was going to happen is, because I was originally supposed to talk and give my presentation about Volume Shadow Copies in April, and then the whole volcano business got it cancelled. So Rob Lee's actually said, well, why don't you give your presentation in DC instead? So, yeah, fantastic. I'll do it there. But, you know, you would have preferred if I'd done it in the EU summit.
Yeah.
But this whole thing with my wife being pregnant and all kinds of funniness going on with that, it just put September in a bit of doubt, really. So, but, yeah. So that's one of the reasons I'm pushing the Sens thing so heavily, is because I am going to be speaking there again. Instead rather than the EU one, and I'm quite looking forward to that, because this time it's not just going to be a presentation about Volume Shadow Copies, but then Mark the Tool McKinnon, who we have here with us, is also working on a rather smart little tool based on some of my findings, aren't you, Mark?
I'm attempting to. It's coming along. It's working.
So we're hoping that at that time we'll have something that we can show people that will be quite significant and helpful in their investigations in the future.
That's just going to be huge, because one of the big things is I'm learning Windows 7 forensics, which is kind of one of the themes of them this year, is the Volume Shadow Copies is one of these gifts that Microsoft has given forensic examiners. So the fact that you guys are working on this tool is marrying up a very important, I want to say artifact, it's actually a series of artifacts on the operating system, with a great tool. That's just going to be amazing.
So, well, we hope so. I know how hard Mark's been working on this, and I don't think I'm kidding whenever I say he's sleep deprived and all kinds of stuff because of him spending so much time working on it. So I feel really, really pleased that, you know, he's doing this. And, you know, I'm not afraid to give you a compliment, Mark. Not afraid. And to be honest, I think you're a genius.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far. I'm just lucky. I'm lucky to be around people like you, Lee. Just to bask in the wealth of knowledge that you have, it just...
Yeah.
What can I say?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You can hear I'm convinced. I tell you what was really good, though. I mean, last week I got an email from Troy Larson, and he'd seen my presentation that I posted up online about this, and he's like, this is fantastic, we really need to get together and talk about what we can do with this. And I'm just like, that's fantastic. There's another one of my heroes who's going to be at the SANS summit, who I'm actually going to get to sit down to, and he's going to be asking me questions about something that I started doing because of him. It's just brilliant. So it's going to be very, very satisfying, I think, this. So, yeah. Well, I don't know if you guys got anything else you want to discuss.
I can't think of anything.
Any other stories?
No, I've CEIC was the theme for me last week. It was an amazing experience where I didn't really watch TV or do keep up on the news, so if anything happened, I sure didn't know about it.
Apparently, BP have spilled quite a lot of oil into United States waters, which is making all of us look rather bad at the moment. So, yeah, fun stuff.
Yeah,
we used to
have the Gulf of Mexico, and now it seems like it's going to be ruined for a while here. In fact, they're saying it may not be fixed until August. So. It's a mess. Ugh.
That's terrible, isn't it? But, was there a specific talk at CEIC, a specific presentation you went to, which you thought offered more than any of the others that you attended.
Yes, I think Rob Lee and the super timeline analysis offered the most content. And I had actually just gone through the SEC 508 class before I went out there. So most of that content that Rob gave, I already had before. So for me, it was sort of review. But when I look at all the presentations that I got to attend, that's the one that stood out is really the most content. Although Dave Shaver's Advanced Hiding Techniques, which actually was the first one that I attended, basically showed how Dave, who's an extremely accomplished incident response forensic guy for the U.S. Army's Criminal Investigation Division, goes through kind of how he does the incident response stuff. So I found that very educational also. So I was really drawn to, you know, the guru talks. You know, anytime I can have a forensic guru who, you know, knows a lot more than I do, which, you know, isn't a high bar to clear, I always really like those presentations because I get to kind of look into the mind of how these guys work and pick up some of their knowledge. So I think those two are the ones that really stood out as a lot of really good information in a short amount of time.
Superb. And no doubt that I'll get to CEIC at some point in the future as well.
Yeah, it's in Orlando next year, so I would like to go also, and maybe that's easier for you because it's not. Although, you know, the interesting thing about CEIC is it was really international in scope. I was amazed at how many people from Europe and Asia. Asia made a little bit more sense because it's West Coast, but I was really surprised by the amount of people from Europe who came over because that's a long haul to go to Vegas.
Yeah, it's because it's in Vegas, yeah. That's why.
That's probably the draw, yeah.
And, you know, most of people from this country, Vegas has everything to offer them, really.
Sure.
Alcohol and gambling, and there's not really much else people go for over here, to be fair.
Right.
So, I kid. Okay, well, I'm struggling to think of anything else, to be honest. Did you just recently take your GCFA exam as well, Eric?
I did. I took it right before I went out to CIC, and I'm happy to say I passed it. If you have a background in digital forensics and you're pretty comfortable with it, and you pay attention to the course content, whether it's live or I did it on demand. And get your indexes ready, which is, you know, one of the things you're needing to do for your SANS test because they allow you to do open book. But if you don't know the content, you're never going to get there. So people, you know, there's all sorts of different techniques for creating your indexes. So I took it and I passed it, and I thought it was a very good certification. I think it's a very, you know, the test was reasonable. I really love the 508 training. I've actually completed the 408. Actually, I have to finish the assessments to complete it, but I've gone through all the content. So that's it was a good experience. And what I recommend to people is, Rob, I don't have the link. Maybe you can put it up on Forensic Forecast. There's a link for an assessment that you can go to take that tests you on the 408 knowledge, the 508 knowledge, and I think even the SEC 401 knowledge, which is their security essentials. And that will let you know if you're as good as you think you are, because one of the reasons I took both those courses, I took the assessment. I didn't do very good on 408 or 508, and originally thought it was, well, you know, I'm not good at Windows 7, but even with the 408 course, I've learned stuff about browser forensics and a lot of other tidbits that I didn't know before. So Rob's done a fantastic job with the 408 class, and it is computer forensic fundamentals, but there's a lot of advanced stuff in there that would be helpful for everybody to know. So it's essentially what Rob did is, as he explained to me, he took the SANS forensic course and broke it up into two pieces.
Yep. I think the GCFA is one of the hardest but yet most rewarding exams I've ever taken, to be honest.
It was hard, yeah. No, it took me 2.5 hours to get through it, which for me, I test very fast, so that was, for me, it was a marathon, and that was, the 2 days after that, I was just kind of exhausted, because it's a brain drain.
So, you join now the club that Mark McKinnon and I joined last November, was it?
Yep.
I think it was November, wasn't it?
It was November.
So
great.
So
go team.
Yeah. Yep. Unfortunately, Mark scored higher than me, so I still have to bow to his superior knowledge.
Whatever.
It's only like by half a percent or something, but still.
Yeah.
I was just happy that I passed when the score ticked around to whatever it was. I was like, yes!
Yes.
I now don't have to answer any of the other questions, but you know, you have to. Yeah, brilliant. So, okay. Well, thanks for joining us again, Eric.
Absolutely.
A pleasure having you on again. Eric is the author of Fistful of Dongles. And that's founder Eric J. Huber, is it?
Yeah, I actually, you can find me at Eric J. Huber. It's ericjhuber.com. I actually took the ericjhuber.com, and that points to the blog, which is ericjhuber.blogger.com. So that's an easier way to find me now.
Cool. And people will also find you on Twitter at Eric J. Huber.
Correct.
And Mark McKinnon is the founder of RedWolfComputerForensics.com, where you can find all of his specialist forensic tools there, including Drive Profit. It's at Mark McKinnon on Twitter again, isn't it?
Correct. And I am not anywhere dead. Else I am going to start going out there a little bit more. I'm not dead. It's been kind of busy.
Yeah. Speaking of which, get back to work. I want that software finished.
Sleep right.
Jeez. So yeah, just to confirm, you're not locked up, bound and gagged in my shed, are you?
No, I am not.
No. I think that's the rumor that's been spreading on Twitter. I'm not very happy about. But yeah, as for me, obviously you can find us here at ForensicForecast.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Schizofroid or at Forecast. And a couple of new additions at Shadow Analyzer, both with an S and a Z for you Americans and non-Americans alike. And soon we hope to have the Shadow Analyzer website up as well, at shadowanalyzer.com. So, yeah. It's great. Life's fun. So, once again, thanks, Eric, and thanks, Mark, for joining us this week.
Thanks for having me.
Fantastic.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Anytime, anytime at all. And we'll catch you all in a couple of weeks. Thanks for now.